Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Move Wild Podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I really appreciate your listenership. Today's episode is awesome and I can't wait to share it with you. But before I do, I wanted to let you guys know about a project that I've been working on for the last few months. Many of you may have seen on my Instagram or on any other social media platform that you follow me on that I've been working on and writing a book, How to Thrive in the Modern World. And I wanted to let you all know that that book is now finished and it will be coming out on October the 1st. This is a guidebook that I've been compiling in many ways over the last 6 years and only really started writing out in the last few months, of the key principles and practices that I believe that we need to navigate this world and to really cultivate vibrant and vital health so that we can thrive. This world is in many ways at a mismatch to our biology and our physiology, and I believe that we do need to be intentional, and many of you will agree if you listen to this podcast, about the practices that we integrate into our life in order to thrive and in order to be vital and in order to cultivate that vibrant health. So this book is that. It's a guidebook as to how to thrive in the modern world. I've been writing it. I've been getting in guest writers to share their expertise on specific subjects, and I'm really, really looking forward to getting it out to you guys. So the launch will be on October 1st. I'll keep you updated as to when it comes out and how you can get your hands on it. And also, if you guys want early access to the book, that is available right now. You can listen in after this show as to how you can get early access to the book. So let's jump into today's episode with Thymen. I'll read out his bio and then we'll get into the interview. So Thymen grew up amongst hunters, nature lovers, beekeepers, and many other nature-oriented enthusiasts. At the tender age of 17, Thymen moved out, being already well-groomed to meet nature's tough demands. He stocked up on nature-themed books, went out to forests with friends and acquaintances, and experimented with all kinds of shelter building, crafting, cordage, foraging for food, and gaining an overall experience of living in the wild. He not only went by with modern equipment for surviving in such environments, but indulged in learning and adapting the ancient ways of survival. It is then that he first coined the term bushcraft amongst friends. His knowledge of living by nature has become so abundant, he's applied to showing others the craft and benefits of the ways of old, the ways that still apply today. Surviving alone or with a single companion for over 5 weeks with no other equipment other than a knife has taught him many things, not in the least that he found his place. Over the past 10 years, he has seen many European and Canadian landscapes and designed courses for each different environment and scenario. He has developed several courses for bushcraft schools in Europe and has been a guest instructor for companies and founded his own school, Living by Nature, which nowadays is one of the most outstanding schools in the primitive and native skills world. His specialty is crossing bridges and creating possibilities. He brings together academic and practical education, creates courses from a day to over a year, and even a full year program for aspirational instructors in teaching bushcraft skills. He's adamant about everything he's doing and teaches out in nature and for the company. He intends to let people get acquainted with the bushcraft experience and to realize what it's like to forego many ways of modern civilization. This was an interesting and epic conversation with Thymen. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys think. So let's jump into this episode and you guys can listen in after the show for how you can connect with Thymen, how you can connect with me, and how you can get early access to my new book.
Cool. All right. So welcome, Thymen, to the show. I really appreciate your time and coming on.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so to start with, I'd like to get a little bit of your backstory and how you got into what you do today, and if you could kind of also break down what it is exactly that you do today as well.
Yeah, that's fine. It's a big story. I'll try to keep it short. So how do I get into this all? I was born in a hunter's family, so my whole family hunted. And for a lot of countries, that's very normal. So for you guys in Australia, for example, it's really normal to hunt and all that stuff. But in Europe, it's not that normal anymore. And we have a lot of hunters, but yeah, being raised in a family of almost everyone in my family was hunting, it's a bit strange nowadays. But I did. They also did tanning, willow basketry, made pigments out of different plants and stuff. We had our own bees, a lot of bees, 125 beehives, and that kind of stuff. And then,
Wow.
yeah, and then when I got older, my father and my stepfather, because my parents separated later on. They were also rangers, and my stepfather was at the police, but it's special police. So it's police that is only for flora and fauna. So we were outside a lot. Well, I was outside a lot with them, or hunting, or just in the woods, or whatever. And then, like I already said, eventually my parents divorced. So then I haven't seen my father for like 12 years, my real father. And because of my mother and my stepdad, they kept me away from him, kind of. It's a bigger story to that, of course, but I'm going to keep it short. And and that of course, as a child, you don't understand that really. And it hurts a bit. And then you're going to do what you like most. So nature for me was always a place to go back to, and I did that. And then when I went 16, I got kicked out of the house by my stepdad because he could not handle me anymore. And I had to do a lot for myself, really. And then I started giving courses slowly because I heard of the bushcraft scene and all that stuff. And they brought me to that brought me to an event. And on the event, they asked me of I asked, is it okay if I give a course and bring some wild boar and a roe deer, for example, and then teach how you get all the meat parts out of each other and the skin off and the bones out and all that stuff. And they were like, yeah, that's fine, but aren't you a little bit young to do that? And I said, yeah, maybe for you guys, but we can just do it. And if it's not good enough for you guys, you can just stop the whole thing and let someone else do it. So they, yeah,
Yeah.
so because you're young, right? So you're like, yeah, okay, just do it, you know. So I did it, and then they found it really good. And then there were some people came up to me and said, "Damon, would you like to give a class in that? You get a little bit paid and all that." And I said, "Yes, that's fine. Of course, it's fine." And because I was really happy, you know, they appreciate it. First, you hear like, "Aren't you a little bit young?" And then there are people that want to pay you a little bit of money for giving a class on it. So it was, yeah, of course. And and then when I was 18, I started my first company, and I did that with someone that was already for a longer period of time in the bushcraft scene. And he also was, before Facebook, of course, he was one of the owners of the Dutch Bushcraft Forum. So a lot of information and stuff was shared through there. And he was the owner of that. So a lot of people knew him. And then we started a company called Bushcraft International, what was really based on giving courses all around the world, working together with other people as well, but very modern. And after 2 years, I said to him, like, well, this is a little bit too too modern for me. I want more back to the basics, and basics doesn't mean simple or whatever, and primitive, more primitive, and primitive doesn't mean simple or basic again. It's just using less modern materials. And so we did. Eventually I stopped with Bushcraft International and then started Living by Nature when I was around 21, 22. Yeah, and that's where it started. Really. Yeah. So that's a very, very fast story of a long journey.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it sounds like it's quite your story in the sense that you were exposed to a lot of these crafts and a lot of these skills quite young in your journey. And you, like a lot of people learn these things, you know, coming into their 20s or 30s or 40s or whatever, but you really learned them. That's amazing to hear that your family were doing that at such a, you know, young age, pretty much as soon as you were born, it sounds like.
Yeah, and of course it is. Of course, my parents aren't me, you know, so they taught me a lot of different stuff, but when I went older, I went totally nuts in it. So it's, yeah.
What is also happened? Sorry, you go. Yeah, what were you saying?
No. So it's also a labor of love, you know. It's
yeah.
I'm so fascinated and enthusiastic by all those skills. Well, you've spoken to Kev Newton, right? So that's another guy that's really fascinated and enthusiastic by all those skills, and also the people in his team. You know, it's really nice.
Absolutely. What were some of the skills that you picked up on as you kind of left your family and kind of dove into the world of primitive skills a bit more? And how have those skills and learning all these skills in general, how has that impacted your kind of perspective on life and your sense of self or confidence?
So, yeah, sorry for me, because I'm Dutch, sometimes it's a bit difficult, but your question is about what kind of skills helped you?
Yeah, so what kind of skills did you pick up on when you left your family? Because I know that you mentioned that you learned hunting and tanning and some of those skills while you were with your family, but as you left, what were some of the new skills that you picked up on and learned?
The new skills that I picked up on were things like bone working, a lot of fibers, and I think containers like birch bark containers, spruce bark containers, ash bark containers, those things, and make them into really tight and good looking materials instead of just making it for use. Because that's also a thing that I found really important, is that that when you make something and you put such an amount of time into such a craft, that you can also put time into making it good looking, you know. So but the thing that really, if you ask me, that really helped me through some time when I got kicked out of the house and that stuff, and because it was really nasty. It was not just because getting kicked out of the house is not really new, you know, but the way it was, but I'm not going in there, was really nasty. And I think the thing that helped me most, that's also why I still like that so much, is buckskin tanning.
Yeah,
it's you can put a lot of physical work in that, and eventually it gets so soft and beautiful. There's no other leather that you can pair with it. So yeah. those crafts are the ones that I really like.
That's awesome. And I guess learning those crafts, it gives you, or it teaches you, at least from my perspective and the little bits that I've done of primitive skills, it's taught me to be patient, and it's taught me all these other skills other than the actual skill, like kind of mental skills, like to be patient and to really appreciate the technologies in my life and appreciate the art of making things and being able to make things. And it is such a human skill that we seem to have lost in the modern world, where not many people know how to make things, or not many people can make things anymore. So it must give you a real appreciation of your ability to make these things, I imagine.
Oh yeah, it's totally true. It's totally true. And that's also what I meant with the buckskin tanning. It's when you work on those materials, it's in the beginning it's all hard work. You put a lot of energy in it, scraping the grain layer and the epidermis away, and then or first the hypodermis, whatever, and then you got left with the dermis layer. That's a lot of physical work. A lot of people found it really, really hard to do. It's a lot of work. It's heavy work sometimes, depending on the size and the animal you're working on. And then you can work on those hides really hard. You can't really do anything wrong. And then you put them in the water, and then the next day you look at them and they look totally different. And then you have to be a little bit nicer to them, because now they can tear a little bit apart. And then you go work the, yeah, this is also a fast explanation, but then you work the brains in, because those hides are done with the brains of the animal. And an animal has enough brain, except for cows, of course, and horses. But an animal like a deer, a red deer, fallow deer, roe deer, or whatever, they have enough brain to brain their own hides. So, and the brains are needed to make the hide soft eventually, because there are oils in there that mix with water, and they don't start drifting, how do you say that, on the surface of the water, like, for example, olive oil does.
Yeah.
So they mix in with the water, so that's why it's so unique.
Interesting.
And yep.
Yeah. And that's cool.
Yep. And then eventually you're going to work those brains into the hide with a mixture of water, and then you have to soften it, and you have to put a lot of work into that again. And then eventually, and I'm looking now because there are 70 hides hanging in front of me. Yeah, it's really cool. And then, yeah, eventually it's so soft. So all those stages and the time that you put in there, and I'm not talking about you can do this in a couple of days. So when we teach this skill, it for a student to finish one hide takes 3 days. So you can imagine how much work there is going into those hides to finish. And yes, if you... We can, for example, learn a lot from the students by watching them doing the buckskin tanning, and see how they react, see how they cope. Yeah, they cope with their hides, how they feel, how they behave. All that stuff tells a lot about the student. But that saying that, you can look into yourself as well and see, okay, am I stressed? Am I frustrated? What's going wrong? Why do, yeah, all those things. You can learn so much from yourself and others by just doing these skills. There's so much skills more.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And it seems like something that we've lost in the modern world is that those skills, like just the ability to make something.
Yeah, totally true. Everything goes so fast now as well. Everything is so fast. I don't know how that's in Australia, but here in Europe, things are going so freaking fast, and everything needs to make money. And if it doesn't make money, then yeah, it's boring. It's you don't have to do that. Then just hire someone who does it for you, you know, and it's money again. And then the things that are where you learn stuff from, really. And it's being forgotten, and that's again simple what I'm saying now, but it is what it is. Shame.
Yeah. It's good the work that you're doing, because it kind of teaches people to slow down and come back to a more natural way of living, which is why I love the fact that you've called your business Living by Nature, because it's such a great name. But it kind of that kind of work forces people to come back to being slow and living more naturally. Do you notice that as participants kind of come into your courses? Do you notice a change and a shift in their personality?
Yeah, totally. Totally. And what you said as well, and the personalities as well. So normally it takes like 2 to 3 days, and then and they really let go their old kind of life, you know, and because they're not letting it go, but in their yeah, by the sense of being here, and then they start to move slower, they talk less, because in the beginning, oh my god, they talk so much. And it's normal, you know, it's a new place, totally new area, there's new people, so they want to talk, they want to find their place in the group as well, which is not really needed, because you're getting instructions by an instructor and all that stuff, so you can just sit down, interact with your other students and with the instructors and that stuff. But in some way they do, and they want to find their place immediately, and they start talking, and who's this, who's that? And then later on, after those days, yeah, they're getting slower, but not like in energy, it's just lower their voice, they start to blend in with nature a little bit more, they start to see the birds, they start to see the animals, they start to find out stuff that they were thought we need an instructor for that. So for different kinds of plant fibers, for example. So they've been learning how to make proper cordage now, for example. And now in the more early mornings, they get out of bed, do a little walk, and then they see different kinds of grass or different kinds of plants and start trying to make cordage out of that too. And they find out that it works too. And all those stuff, and they really start to see nature again. And yeah, sometimes, well, actually a lot of times, we have a lot of crying people around, because yeah, it really is, because and crying out of joy because they haven't seen that for such a long time. And the funny thing is, most of the time they always refer back to their youth, when they were building shelters and playing with their bare hands, and it didn't matter if they were dirty and stuff. Even farmers, we have sometimes farmers of military people that still work with their hands. There is something different of being on a farm or in the woods with your fellow military people and being here. And with here we have different locations, of course, but I mean in the course, in the class, and
yeah. Yeah,
it's weird to see, and at the same time it's really normal to see.
Yeah, really, it feels like it because I really like your emphasis. I was checking out your website, and you talked about getting people to feel at home in nature, and I think that's something that we've lost. We kind of have this mentality of like, oh, we need to dominate nature, or nature is this thing that is wild, and like we, like humans and nature in the modern world, they're seen as separate. But I really like, from what I've seen of your work, how you emphasize the fact that humans and nature kind of belong together. And if we can try and see nature as our home, that is ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you with your work and with the natural movement and stuff, I totally believe that you feel those things with, for example, your students as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's cool. You guys offer some quite in-depth and long experiences from what I've seen, and what was the inspiration for offering more immersive experiences, if you like, and why do you think it's so important to get people out in nature for quite a long period of time and really relaxed and learning these skills over a course of time? Like, how long do some of your courses go for?
A year.
Oh, wow.
We also have courses that are 2 year. But
wow.
Yeah, the thing with those courses and the reason why is, if you teach like the common bushcraft and common bushcraft, for example, if you look at some companies in the UK, for example, and common doesn't mean bad or simple again. It is just what we see as bushcraft. That what Les Hiddens, for example, and you guys know him. Les Hiddens, Ray Mears, Morse Gohansky, Dave Westcott, those people brought into, well, Dave Westcott is a little bit of a different story, but yeah, the other ones brought into the world. And that's what I call common bushcraft. And then you have those side things. And one of those side things is what we do. So we teach primitive living skills, kind of. But also, again, a little bit different. But this makes it really difficult to explain. But yeah, if you teach primitive living skills, for example, someone wants to learn how to do flint napping, you can't teach someone flint napping in just a day. It's impossible. You can learn how percussion flaking, pressure flaking, and all those things are, and give them a feeling to what it is, but you can't teach it in a day. And then we have those courses, like our year course, for example, and those people are not with me the complete year. They're with me a couple of days a month. So at the end, in the whole year course, they have seen me like 70 days. And that's still a lot for a lot of people that still have their business and their work and their children and their everything. But yeah, and then our year course, if someone, for example, says, I would like to be more with nature, I want to feel the connection with nature, I want to be more immersed with nature, I want to learn all those skills. And there's really a lot of different reasons for people why they want to learn all those skills. So some really want to be teachers, some want to feel connected again, yeah, etc., all those things that I already said. So there's a lot of different reasons. But if you want to learn, for example, how to be in the woods for a longer period of time, being comfortable with no modern materials, for example, you can't learn that in a week. You can't. Because going out with nothing really, yeah, that can be really, really dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. Or it can be a really short trip because you're coming home because it's not what you thought it was. Because a lot of people think survival is really cool. See that on Discovery Channel or some other channels. And then they start doing it and they think, oh my God, this really sucks because it's hard and it's wet and it's cold and I haven't slept and all that stuff. But if you know some tips and tricks, for example, yeah, then you can really enjoy. And that's what we teach those students for the year course, for example. And yeah, teach them how to be comfortable in the woods. And if they are comfortable, then we're going to work with knives and stuff. But working with a knife, everyone does that his whole life. But working with a knife now in the woods, working on wood, working on hides, working on flesh, working on stone, working on antlers, all that stuff is a total different story. And you can't just use your knife like you do on your kitchen table. You need to have some proper skills to not hurt yourself or hurt others if you're with a couple of people more. And that's how we built this course. And it's not silly and it's not simple and all that stuff, because maybe it sounds a little bit like that, but it goes really, really in depth. And then we have our philosophies and ways to look at nature in a more spiritual way. So our course is not like an airy fairy course. It's not, but it's also not a hardcore military course. It's just being humans kind of course. And
I love that.
Yeah, that's how we built. Yeah,
and yeah,
that's why they take so long.
Yeah, exactly, and I guess participants would get so much more out of it because it is long and because you put in the effort and the time towards creating an immersive experience over just like a 2-day, you know, basic 101 kind of course. You can't really get much out of that. But these immersive experiences, you get more depth and I guess you also get to see the more philosophical and spiritual side of interacting with nature as well, which I'd like to go into a bit. But before we do, can you just kind of explain to people the difference between like survival skills and primitive living skills? Because I think a lot of people sometimes who aren't in that world can confuse the two.
Okay, so I think I'm going to explain the survival, bushcraft and primitive skills then in a really short explanation, because that makes it a little bit easier to understand. So you have, and this is, again, not always how it is, but if we just make it very simple, survival is getting in a situation that is really bad and you want to get out of nature as soon as possible. Then you have bushcraft, which is you want to go in nature with a couple of modern materials and for a certain amount of time and make it yourself comfortable. And then you have primitive living skills, and that's more like you don't bring modern materials, you go in nature, make everything from nature, of course with respect for nature, without any modern material. Even a knife is not taken with you. So you use flint or other kinds of stone or antler or shell to cut with and all that stuff. So yeah, there's really no way you can relay back to modern equipment, which gives a total different story to your adventure.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And a lot of people would kind of be intimidated by that. But when you think about it, it's like that's how humans lived for most of our existence, was out in nature, at home in nature, using all those technologies and tools. And they must have been fairly complex technologies and tools for us to have been able to survive and thrive and feel at home out in nature. And I think a lot of people look at those technologies and think that they're simple or not very complex. Could you talk a little bit about how these tools and technologies are actually probably pretty complex when we look at them?
I think to start with, I think that what you said is totally right, and it's not simple at all. And if you look at the people, as far as we know, and we can, for example, still talk about Inuits or Nenets or the Sun or some other tribes that are still kind of there, of course, because it's not really there anymore. But if you look at those people, and then in the beginning, if you come there, you don't talk with those people, you just look at those people in their camps, not outside their camps, but in their camps. Yes, you can say that it looks very simple for us modern people, because there is no TV, there is no car, there is no electricity, there is no, yeah. So in that way, maybe it is simple. But if you go, for example, with an elder or a hunter into the woods, and you look at what he does, and just by looking, you don't even have to ask anything, but just look at what he does. Well, you find out that his understanding of the natural world where he lives in, so his specific natural environment, is so deep connected, and he knows what kind of plants he needs to use for this. He knows that he can build, for example, his foreshaft for his arrows from this material, and that it is best. And if you heat treating it like this and that it gets harder, but also more flexible, and and that the long shaft of his arrow, for example, needs to be from this plant because it's easy straightening and it also grows already straight, but it stays flexible after drying. And this is even, what I'm talking about now is just simple stuff. And then you have like animal reading. So understanding, because you can be a hunter, nowadays, you just pay a lot of money. Then another guide brings you to the animal, brings you up to 100 meters and says, okay, now you can shoot it. And that was the end of your hunting trip. For those people, yeah, for those people, that is, they live in woods that are so freaking big, they can hunt for weeks, for months, not seeing their family, coming back with meat, sometimes nothing, and or fish. And they know where the animals are, they know where they're going. They are like their brothers and sisters, but in a different way, of course, because they have to survive too. So and they don't take more than is needed. Of course they do sometimes. And there's a reason for it. And I'm not going really in depth in that now because it depends on what tribe we're talking about. But yeah, they respect the animal as well. And for a lot of us nowadays, we do not understand that where our meat is coming from and all that stuff. And we have all those vegans and don't get me wrong. I don't hate vegans or whatever. It's just, and I understand that we have vegans because I hate the industry as well, so I totally understand it. But if we look at those people that survive from it, and if you still don't like that stuff, then you've never been there, and then you really don't understand what it is all about. Because those people don't take animal lives for fun; they take animal lives to survive. And
it's a good point, and. I mean, those people wouldn't be able to survive without hunting. Like, they wouldn't, like, it would be impossible to be vegan.
No, it is impossible.
Yeah.
Of course, there's big periods of the years where they eat berries, mushrooms, those kind of stuff, and where they can live off farmed vegetables and all that stuff. But when we go, for example, wintertime, where you need more calories to stay warm, where you need animal fats to survive, for example, then no, they have to hunt. They have to, because otherwise they die. Not from starvation, but getting it cold and slowly dying.
Yeah, definitely. What going back to kind of the more philosophical and spiritual aspects of relating with nature that you talked about, what are some of the things that you teach in that realm? And more of the philosophy that you try and teach and bring into the experiences that you run.
Okay, so yeah, this is a bit difficult for me to explain when we're not in such a situation, and it's also difficult in English. But for example, if we're in the woods, and we sometimes. When we feel that the students are really, how do you say that? That they're a bit busy, or they have been working really hard on a project or whatever. And they're very, very fast and busy in their heads at the moment. Then we sometimes say to the students, okay, guys, let's go. And we bring everyone apart. And you can choose a location where you want to sit, and you go sit there for a certain amount of time. We don't tell them. Sometimes it's an hour, sometimes 3 hours, sometimes it's a whole day, and just to sit there, and look around you, and then they come into that state again where we talked about in the beginning as well. If you're frustrated, it can be really hard to sit for a really long period of time in a certain spot. And if you're happy, then it's all okay. And if there is something in the family, for example, back home, then it can be really hard because you get a lot of time to think if you sit for a whole day, or sometimes we even do it longer with special courses, 3 days, 4 days, on one spot. And in the beginning, you have a lot to think about. And at a certain moment, the thoughts disappear because you have been thinking about it all the time. And then there's nothing really more to think about. And that's the state where we want to bring those people sometimes. And then afterwards, we're going to talk about those things. And then we're going to talk about the things more in a philosophy, more in a way of philosophy. And we're going to talk about all the animals that they've been seeing, how close the animals got. So a lot of students then saw, for example, a roe deer, and they were sitting really still against the tree, and the roe deer came up to them, up to a meter sometimes, and without seeing them, because the roe deer sees him, but you sit so still, you don't move, and then sometimes the roe deer shocks because it smells you, but you're not moving, and that's not normal for a human to do. So they get curious, and then they start to see. They don't really see you. They see you, but they don't understand. And then for the students, that of course is for us too. But it's very, very special to see this kind of things and understand that it's just us that makes the animals scared. But if you are quiet and humble and respectful to the animal, and you're just sitting against a tree, not moving, and you give the time to the animal instead of to you, I want to see most of this animal now. No, you give the time to the animal to find out what this weird lump against this tree is that smells like human but doesn't act like human. Well, those kind of things, and this is not really, really in-depth philosophy kind of things, but the thing with those things is that these are things that we preach most, because this is having respect for nature, don't interfere and interrupt. And of course, we do that a lot of the time, but I don't know how to explain that really well in English. But
yeah, I get that, and I really like that. I think it, because I guess, what you're talking about is having that respect, but on a deeper embodied level through walking people through that experience of just having to sit and observe and be in nature in a way where they're, kind of just observing, and that would teach people to have a lot of respect and to see nature in a deeper way, I imagine.
Yes, indeed. And then your understanding of the natural environment get another level to it. You know, now you know that if you're sitting somewhere or just be somewhere, you're quiet for a while, that you can see things that you normally could never see because you were too busy and all that stuff. And this is just, again, a simple explanation of what stuff is all about. But it's beautiful when those students come back and they tell their stories, because afterwards, of course, we tell each other what it is. And we're not teachers anymore at that moment, because they tell their experiences to the other students. And I get, how do you call those? Chicken pox now.
Goosebumps.
Thinking about those things back again makes me a bit emotional too, because it's, for the students sometimes it's
powerful.
Eye-opener to the max.
That's awesome. That sounds really powerful. Do you think the ability to, or having the space to tell stories, obviously that's a really important human thing, like we're storytellers. And you must see that a lot on your courses, people actually have the space to tell stories, because it seems like in the modern world, we still tell stories, but it's so quick. We don't really have the time or the attention of many people to be able to tell our story. And how important of an element do you think that is in nature connection and in primitive living and in what you do?
Oh, storytelling. Storytelling is everything. It's key. Okay, and storytelling, you have storytelling and you have storytelling. So you can do a story of a big macho thing, you know, I've been hunting and I shot like 7 red deer and all that stuff. And sometimes that's good. But most of the time it's not about that. And storytelling. And then again, we can refer to all those tribes. And if we look at the Inuit, for example, the Inuit children, they have information from 60 generations back in time. Well, I don't have any stories to tell about two generations of my family, for example. So that's really, and that's all done by storytelling. So no, they don't know the whole lives of their grandfather, but they know the importance of what the man was about, where he was special, why he was special, what he did, what his work was, all those stuff, and where he was good at, because those stories got told by their elders or by their father and mother and those stuff. So yeah, we do a lot of storytelling, and of course the students do too. And storytelling can be a story about experiences that we had in a way of teaching as well. But what we also do is, and that we have like a 50-50 men-women percentage in our courses, and also our instructors are, well, at the moment I think it's 60% women that are teaching and 40% men, and that has nothing to do with, is there no men anymore that want to teach? Oh yes, we have lots of people that would like to teach at our school, but yeah, we just, the funny thing is that the women are the ones that they do really good in the courses, but we let them do the storytelling at nights, for example, most of the time. And the reason for that is, I don't know how it goes in Australia, but here in Europe, and in Holland specific, storytelling is done when you're younger or when you're with close relationships. When you get older, it's not about storytelling anymore. It's about facts. And you need to do what you need to do to get the ball rolling and get bread on the table. And that's it. Feed your family, blah, 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 blah. And then also we have those dreams. And then when we get older, you get your car, you get your little house, and you get your family. And that's where your dreams. And after that, your dreams are dead. So when those people do a course, and I know I talk a lot about the course, but it's because, that's my work. But when those people do that and they come on a course, sometimes they're a bit in shock when we're going to say, okay, people, would you like it to hear a story before you go to bed, really? And they're like, huh? What are you going to do? Talk about Pocahontas again or what? And then we're kind of like, yeah, we do. We're going to talk about Pocahontas again. And then they start to listen. But the stories that we tell, and Willow Lore, my colleague, for example, she's originally Dutch, but she lives for like over 30 years in Scotland now, in the middle of the Cairngorms, so in the middle of nowhere. She's also a bit older than I am. I'm 29. She is like in the 50s now. So those stories, it's better if a person that has more life experience tells those stories. And then those stories are about, for example, thunderbirds, or how coyote made fire, or so there are stories about from the Cree people or the Inuits or the Blackfoot, or all those stories. They're always about how animals help the animal to do this or that, or how plants or trees did this, or how, and I'm not specifically believe in God, but there is a really good writer in England that they write for the King and Queen of England, and they write about how God created elephants, for example, or a worm or whatever, but in a really funny way. So it's not, it has nothing to do with a religion or being Catholic or Christian or whatever. It is just about, he uses the word God and he lives under the ground, and there under the ground he finds different types of clay, and out of that clay he makes elephants and horses and stuff. So it's really cool. It has nothing to do with all the other stuff.
I love that. That's great. And story kind of brings back that sense of a sense of curiosity, at least in my perspective. When I hear story, it's like it brings back a sense of playfulness and curiosity and really looking at the world in a different way. Because as you say, so many people, especially in adulthood, they look at the world through a very kind of boring lens, a very much like almost like so practical, it becomes distant and a kind of boring way to look at the world. And I love how reintegrating story, especially what you guys do in you know, taking some of these stories from different cultures around the world, that must be really powerful for participants to get reintroduced to that way of seeing the world through story.
Yeah, my head at the moment is going up and down and up and down, because I totally agree what you're saying. Yeah. And it is. And that's also, you said it yourself already, that having coaches from around the world. Yes, we have our instructors from around the world, and that's one of the reasons. You know, it's one of the reasons is to have different cultures, different styles of teaching, different ways of telling stories, for example, and different flora and fauna to talk about, and different way of doing things. And and indeed, what you were saying about, yeah, I can't really say that again in English, but yeah, all those different approaches and curiosities indeed, and having your own, and we're still talking storytelling, but yeah, having your just got, yeah, you just got told in a fairy tale sometimes, you know, or something that is based on reality but also has a fairy tale to it, but it gives you that, yeah, you already told that, you get that. So everyone that's sitting around the fire, for example, and the fire is also, it's so important that there is a fire. You know, look at yourself sitting around with each other, like you normally would do with sitting around the fire, but there's no fire. How awkward would that be? It's so important that there is a fire. But yeah, giving you that. Because we do that sometimes, and we ask the students, okay, you heard the story, but what was going on in your head now after hearing this story? And then you also hear that, of course, because of the story is the story, but people think and dream of total different things, but they hear the same story. It's very funny. It's very funny. So, yeah.
Yeah, really, I like that. It's like each person has a different way of relating that story to their life and their specific circumstances.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
And you're free in doing that. Nobody is going to say, you can't think like that. It's just, it works really relaxing as well. So yeah, we do a lot of that type of storytelling before they go to sleep. And then of course we have a lot of storytelling about specific subjects, for example, buckskin tanning or hunting or working with a knife, but that's a different way of storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that. That's great. Can you, like something that comes to mind for me, a lot of these experiences that you offer must bring up a lot of challenges for the participants, maybe not for you because you're used to it, such as cold and hunger. How do you deal with some of that stuff?
What is the question? Is the question for me, or how do I deal with the students when they have such experiences?
Both, I would say.
Okay, so yeah, if you're for example in Canada and you're doing a winter expedition or whatever, and you're in the woods, and then there's a wind chill coming by and it's minus 60, and you're walking in only buckskin clothing and all that stuff, yeah. You need to keep moving, otherwise it's get very, very cold. But yeah, you just And that's just an example of how it really is. And if you haven't been eating for a while, yeah, it's shit. It really is. Because you want to eat. That's what our bodies want. We are one big eating machine. That's the only thing we are, actually. And if that's not there, we die. It's as simple as that. But, yeah. Of course, we have our brains, and it doesn't work like that because we can do a lot. But how do I cooperate with those things? Okay, one weakness that I have, for example, is sleep. So if I can work really hard without sleeping much, but there is a certain breaking point for me. And if I don't sleep properly, then I get not grumpy, but a bit depressive. Yeah. And then everything becomes dark, but not like I want to commit suicide kind of dark. It's just dark, and nothing is fun anymore. You don't want to get stuff done anymore. You don't want to do anymore. So that's for example, a weakness that I have. And then I start to miss people. And that gets on top of it, because that's a social thing. I can't be on my own for a long period of time without having problems, as long as I can find a little bit of food and have proper sleeps.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. But if you talk cold, hunger, thirst, building, so heavy physical stuff, walking or running or walking with heavy loads for long periods of time without really seeing the end of the trip, I can handle that. That's all no problem. It's just I'm a digger for I love type 2 fun, and I don't know if you know what I mean with that.
No.
But type 2 fun is like so you have like type 1 fun.
Yeah.
That's just fun. And then type 2 fun is when you look back at things, it is fun, but at the moment itself it wasn't really fun, but those are the moments that you learn a lot and all that stuff, you know. So I love that, and that's always like that has a special special place in my brain somewhere that says that keeps me going, because I always think, oh yeah, but after a couple of months and we talk about this stuff, we have such big laughs and we have good stories again and all that stuff. So let's go on, because it's all for a greater good later on. So that keeps me going.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I totally resonate with that and agree with that. I think I much prefer type 2 fun as well. What kind of foods are you getting when you're out there? Like, are you hunting? Are you gathering? And what kind of, are you subsisting just off the land, or do you bring food in? Like, what's the food situation like on some of those courses?
So when we're teaching, most of the time we bring in food, of course, because the reason for that is if you want to live off the land, you're busy with that day in, day out, and we don't really have time to teach. So what we normally do, so let's say we go back to the year course again. So we have our vegetables that are, we call it bio vegetables. I don't know how you guys call that, but these are not farmed with pesticides and all that stuff.
Yeah, organic. Yeah, organic.
Yeah, organic. Thank you. Yeah. That's the word. Yeah, organic farmed, and we get our meat from the hunters or from some of my colleagues that hunt as well, and get the meat like that. And we also process it.
Nice.
With the students and all that.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, I think so too. I think that's very important if you give a course like this. So also sugars and those kind of stuff, milk for your coffee. There still is coffee and tea, but sugars are no longer there. So that's sometimes hard for the people. There's no milk. There's no yeah, all that stuff got taken away kind of in the course because you can't find that. Sometimes there's honey. We, of course, sometimes have honey, but that's also, they don't get a lot of honey because it's not easy to find honey in nature. So we base the food of our students on what you could find in nature. And of course, a little bit more because they have to think and they have to learn and all that stuff. So,
yeah, I love that.
Give me a second. Great. There are some people. Ik ben in een interview.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, yes, sir. Ik ben even in een interview. Ja, ga maar even naar het meer. Ik zie je zo. Yeah, so there were some
it's okay, no worries.
Locals.
That's fine.
And, yeah, I lost my story. Food.
Yeah. And yeah, it's great that you're doing all the food pretty aligned with natural living, because yeah, as you say, it would be strange if you weren't, due to the fact that you're running all these courses, so that's great.
Yeah, and then of course we have the moments in time where we do all those stuff for real in nature. Then we're the days that we're going gathering and all that stuff. That's what we do too. And then in their end expedition, for example, they go for 14 days end expedition, and where they walk in their buckskin clothing and they walk with their self-made materials and pots and stuff and raw hides and everything, only natural stuff, no modern stuff. And for those 14 days, they only gather. So they don't take modern food with them. They don't take food with them from home. They only live off the land. So they have to fish, they have to do small traps, they have to, because the big traps and stuff and bow hunting is not allowed, so they do a lot of fishing and gathering. So they live off the land for those 14 days without any modern material.
That's great, I love it, so cool. So I'll start to wrap it up, but is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we do finish?
Ooh, do I want anything to touch on before we finish? No, I don't think so. It's very hard for me to find something that I would like to talk about specifically now.
Cool. No worries. All right. Well, yeah, I really appreciate your time. How can people find your website and different things like that? I'll link all of that up in the show notes, but if you could just tell people where they should go if they want to connect with you.
Well, for you can find a lot on the website, of course, livingbynature.nl or .com. We also have our Facebook page, and Kev talked a little bit about that. We're working on that. There are some big things happening for Australia as well, and Living by Nature's involvement. So for the people that live in Australia, there could be a case that Living by Nature is also coming to Australia. But don't pin us on that. We're working on that very hard. So,
nice. Yeah, something to look forward to maybe. But that's awesome. Hopefully you guys can come down here. That'd be great.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, yeah, again, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. I'm very appreciating that you asked, and that we find each other.
All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in to today's episode. All the links to connect with Thymon, as I mentioned, are in the show notes. What I would love you guys to do, if you got value out of this episode, is take a screenshot and share it on Instagram stories or Instagram or whatever social media platform you use to get your message out to people, and tag myself and Thymon. We'd love to hear your thoughts and know what you thought of this episode and how you're applying some of the wisdom that you might have taken away from today's episode. So go and do that. That really helps with getting the show out to more people. And also, if you haven't already, please subscribe and leave us a rating and a review. Again, it goes a long way to getting this message that I'm trying to spread out to more and more people. So As I mentioned at the start of the show, my new book is coming out on October 1st, but you guys can get early access to the book right now. If you want to head down to the show notes, I put a link to my Patreon page where you guys can sign up for just $7 a month and you're going to get early access to that book, and you're also going to get access to follow along natural movement workouts every week. So if you guys are keen to get through that book and also keen to integrate some of these natural movement workouts and follow along workouts into your life and these things that I really think are key and vital to developing health and vibrancy, then go down to the show notes and sign up for just $7 a month. You can cancel at any time, and that's the way that you can get early access to my new book. So again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you have an amazing an epic week filled with wildness and filled with energy and vitality. I will catch you on the next episode of Move Wild Podcast coming out on Friday.